Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Michael Goldfarb, filling in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
The sky was falling, it streaked with blood.
Some artists have roving eyes, taking inspiration from anything and everything. Other artists stake out specific territories. Bruce Springsteen is one of those. The events of September 11th sliced across his territory, literally, figuratively, emotionally, like a shard of flaming metal flying from the collapsing World Trade Center. And so it was inevitable that that event would send him to the studio to work the places he has made his own. And now we can hear the result on his new album, The Rising.
You gave your love to see the fields are written.
Bruce has always spoken of rock and roll as his church, and the events of last autumn have inspired some hymn writing. Ordinary folks have been his subject, and on that grim day, his people came up trumps, doing what was needed, not asking to be remembered or thanked.
You can call me Joe, buy me a drink and shake my hand. You want courage? I'll show you courage you can understand.
And the bedrock of all Bruce is that it ain't no sin to be glad you're alive, so we rock, even on lonesome days. Tonight, we're having a first listen to Bruce Springsteen's The Rising. On Point listeners, what do you think about what you're hearing? Do you think it's possible for any work of pop art, any art for that matter, to encompass what was wrought on September 11th? And if you've got a friend who really digs The Boss, why don't you give him a call now and tell him to listen in? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now from New Orleans is Nick Spitzer. He's host and producer of the public radio program American Roots. Good evening, Nick.
Good evening.
And from New York City, Jonathan Pont joins us. He's associate editor of the Springsteen fanzine Backstreets. Good evening, Jonathan.
Hi there. Nice to be with you.
Okay, guys. Now, you've been listening. And first of all, when you heard that Bruce was in the studio and you knew what the subject matter was likely to be, what did you think the album was going to sound like?
Well, first of all, when you hear that Bruce Springsteen is in the studio, it could be anywhere from 6 months to a year or more before there's a finished product. This time he worked with a new producer by the name of Brendan O'Brien, who's worked with groups like Pearl Jam, Rage Against the Machine, and Bob Dylan. So he came out with new sounds, and frankly, when I finally heard the record, it was really amazing to figure out that Bruce had come up with entirely new ways to get his music across. It doesn't really sound like anything he's done before.
That was Nick, yeah?
Nope, that was Jonathan.
Guys, you got to identify yourself. Your voices are in the same range here. Nick, what did you think?
Well, I have to admit, first of all, that the last time I saw Bruce Springsteen was probably around 1972, live. He was playing at the Earlton Bowl in Earlton, New Jersey. And being a folklorist, I've always loved sort of the down-home roots side of him, playing for the guys in the bar and the small bowling alley scene. And then my favorite records are ones like Ghost of Tom Joad in Nebraska. So, you know, honestly, I wasn't sitting around waiting for this record. That doesn't mean I'm not interested. I'm terribly interested because I'm as interested in the music of Bruce Springsteen as Bruce Springsteen, the phenomenon. But I think this is a really interesting record. And to me, the great thing about it is that it will provoke a lot of dialogue, and it certainly brought a lot of attention to the issues.
Nick, it's interesting that you bring up Nebraska, because, I mean, when I heard about this, I just assumed that this was going to be one of these albums that would have, you know, just be two notches up from the demos that he makes in his little garage-like office. And I thought, yeah, this is going to be like Nebraska. And yet you mention it, and there's this wonderful song. I mean, it's the one that struck me hardest the first time I listened through. We were just hearing a bit of it in the intro, and I just like to play it for the listeners. It's called Nothing Man. This could almost have come from Nebraska, except. Go ahead. Self-deprecation and the kind of floating, chanting way the boss is singing that. He's a very small man, but he's portrayed as a hero. You want courage? I can show you courage. You can't understand. What do you think of that song, Jonathan?
Nothing Man is sort of an oddity. That's one of the ones that does sound the same as some of his earlier stuff, but it's really about someone who comes to a place that he probably didn't expect, just being an ordinary person. It sounds like a firefighter in this song. And just by going about his normal, everyday duty, he finds himself, you know, people buying him drinks, people want to shake his hand, and he just doesn't feel like, you know, he's done anything really out of the ordinary other than, you know, put on his boots and go to work and answer the call when it comes. And I'm sure that there are, you know, I can't really speak for the firefighters in New York or Washington or anywhere else, but I'm sure that a lot of them have had to struggle with those feelings. It's odd because I passed a firehouse the other day in Lower Manhattan, and I found myself, I didn't really know what to say to the guys. They were just sort of congregated outside. The door to the firehouse was open and the fire truck was there, and you want to stop and sort of like look at the fire truck or something and say hello. And you sort of feel like, am I exploiting these guys? Or, you know, is it okay to say hello to them? Or do they feel heroic? Or do I feel like an ordinary person too? So it's a little odd still.
Jonathan, I wondered from Nick in New Orleans here, my understanding of this song actually is from written in 1994. And so this is added in to the mix here as far as lyrics go. I mean, certainly there are plenty of lyrics on this record that are consistent with Springsteen's long interest in everyday folk and their traumas and trials, tragedies. So in a sense, it's folded in here, not to mention just the sound.
Right.
Yes, John, go ahead.
No, he does have a history of sort of stalking songs and then, you know, coming back to them as, and I think that was one, in fact, that had been revisited and probably reworked to fit on this record. Yeah.
Hmm. On Point listeners, we're talking about and listening to the new Bruce Springsteen album, which is only in the shops today. And if you haven't been able to get to your local record emporium, listen in closely and you'll get your first taste. We want to hear what you have to say about this. And I'm talking also with Nick Spitzer, who hosts the public radio program American Roots, and Jonathan Pont, who's associate editor of the Springsteen fanzine Backstreets. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Jill is on the line.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I'm very excited to talk to you. As I was telling your screener, My fiancé and I actually met through Bruce Springsteen, so he has actually changed my life in a very significant, positive way.
I think many of us can testify to experiences like that.
Yes, and we actually got engaged in Asbury Park in February, right on the beach. My comment about the album, and I've listened to it a number of times and have seen the lyrics prior to the release. I was at a couple of listening parties, and they've kind of been thrown around a number of different sites. My only complaint about the album is it's all from the first person, and it's all, and from what I can tell, all male-female relationships. And I in a couple of instances, I just think it might have worked a little bit better if he had maybe had a father-son relationship to talk about, or at least maybe stand back as a third person and make an observation. Yeah. He's so great at that.
What you're getting at is that the kind of song that's a story, and that really a compact, a fully realized short story in about four or five verses is not really the lyrical style on this album.
Yes, it's not. No, it's not. And also, in one instance, Worlds Apart, which a lot of people love, and I do like it, and I really like the addition of the Pakistani singers, but it's so incongruous. I mean, the idea of
a
woman in Afghanistan right now having a relationship with any kind of an American soldier, I mean, that's harking back to Vietnam and some of the relationships there in that war, and it just doesn't apply here. And Bruce always does such a great deal of research when he does a CD, like with Tom Joad and, you know, some of the others. I mean, he really looks into what's going on. It's just, that one just kind of hit me. Not possible.
It's an interesting point, Jill. I did notice this as well, and this isn't just in this album. I got the sense going back to earlier, about 10 years ago, with Human Touch and Lucky Town, that he was moving away from that songwriting style. I want you to all listen in now, though, because there is a narrative in this. It's a very short one. Taking a first listen to The Rising, the new Bruce Springsteen song. This is his song for the firemen of New York. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Join the conversation.
It was dark, dark to see, feeling like you. Into the darkness of your smoky grief, up a stairs, into the fire, up a stairs, into the fire. I need your tears for love and beauty, call you someplace high, somewhere upstairs. Yeah.
from Boston.
I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is On Point. Sky. Track 6 on The Rising, Bruce Springsteen's new album, just in the shops today. We're having a listen, we're having a conversation about what we're hearing, On Point listeners. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK to join the conversation. In the studio in New Orleans is Nick Spitzer, host and producer of public radio program American Roots, and in New York City is Jonathan Point, associate editor of the Springsteen fanzine, Backstreets. Hear the blood, my blood. Jonathan, you saw Bruce this morning, didn't you?
Yeah, at 7:20 this morning, before my first cup of coffee.
Who was more asleep?
Actually, I think probably I was. I was amazed. Usually you go see Bruce Springsteen and then you stay up all night. This time I stayed up all night and then saw Bruce Springsteen. He did, I guess he did a total of 7 numbers, and I'm not sure how many were actually broadcast on the morning program.
Did you talk to him?
He was really good.
Did you say anything?
It was 4 songs, apparently. No, I did not talk to him, but he was there, and he was, you know, for 7:30 in the morning, he was really on.
With a gig tonight at the Meadowlands, even as we speak, he's playing.
No, he's actually, he doesn't start at the Meadowlands until August
7th. I thought he was playing tonight at the Meadowlands.
No, he's doing a series of dress rehearsals in Asbury Park. He's got his full lighting and stage and sound in Convention Hall in Asbury. So yeah. He's just doing sort of a series of dress rehearsals and trying out a number of different songs and before full audiences there.
Nick, what do you make of the song "Empty Sky"? This is the song that says, "I want an eye for an eye." You know, he's getting to a feeling people felt.
Clearly, I mean, there's a reference here to the loss of the towers and the loss of a relationship and a sense of the biblical, the old code, eye for an eye. And it's very, very evocative. There's a mention of going out on the plains of Jordan and cutting a bow from the tree of evil and the tree of good. And so it's really rich in symbols. But I do think that one of the interesting things about this record, and maybe what separates it from some of those old, more narrative forms that one of the callers was talking about, is that it's very general. Really evocative. So, I mean, fire can stand for passion. Fire can stand for pain. It can stand for purification. And an empty sky, it could just be, about a relationship. And in a sense, there's a metaphor for a relationship here, as well as a reference to something that we all know happened. So I think this is really brilliantly positioned in a lot of ways, because it doesn't force you to sit and hear a real specific narrative about events that occurred in some kind of historical notion of more like those Tom Joad songs, which are a little more like the old folk tradition. This is very much, to me, pop poetry, which allows the symbols to float in a lot of directions and people can kind of grab the part they need. I happen to think this is a really beautiful and brilliant song.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Tom is on the line.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just thinking how courageous it is for him to try something like this because, I mean, very few artists... through the years, have been able to take a topical event and really translate it into, something vibrant. And, from what I've heard, he's really been very successful with this. And
is this the first you've actually had a chance to listen to it, Tom?
Yeah. I mean, I heard I guess one of the songs on there is from the night when the memorial happened on TV. Is that right?
Yeah, they reprised My City of Ruins.
Yeah, that's right. I was impressed by that. I mean, and from what I've heard tonight, This is really something for somebody to do this.
Let me ask John, do you think that Bruce was aware that he's actually stepping into a minefield, not just because it's an amazing event and everybody will have an idea about how it should be represented or interpreted, but particularly because he is who he is and he writes songs about who the people he writes songs about, that it was almost expected that that he would have to do this kind of work?
It would have seemed odd for a new Bruce Springsteen record to not at least touch on what happened. And instead we get a record that is largely based from start to finish on the events of September 11th and the aftermath. Bruce would probably tell you that it's the job of the songwriter to, you know, look around, see what's going on, take stock of it, and work with it and come up with something that is coherent and relevant and really gets people to think about what happened in some way. And the amazing thing on this record is that you have something like Empty Sky, where there's a person who's gone missing, and then you have something like Waiting on a Sunny Day, which is, you know, as pure and sugary and poppy as, you know, anything he's done.
Nick, just one last crack at the narrative thing. Do you think that it's a vein that's written out, or do you think he's made an artistic choice here? That it doesn't work in these circumstances.
No, I think it works really well. And I think, you know, pop culture is famous for being able to cover a lot of bases and let people kind of fill in their own blanks of meaning. And clearly he's pulled songs from the old song bag. He's got new material that's much more specific and metaphoric to the events. And like I said a moment ago, I mean, I think it's really well positioned. You know, we're coming up on a year anniversary. So in terms of if we just purely looked in terms of reaching audiences, this is an important time to do that. But I'd broaden the discussion to say this. I mean, I think that the great thing about Springsteen is that he really is in the tradition of Woody Guthrie, Dylan after Guthrie, obviously, and even back to Walt Whitman. These are people, poets and then singers, poets who want to explain to Americans what America is. And America is no one thing. And there's, you know, much ambivalence in Springsteen's writing, I've always thought. And sometimes he's been criticized for seeming too populist and then absorbed by the Republicans and born in the USA and that whole controversy. But nonetheless, he tackles the emotional sphere and the social sphere that a lot of people feel. And he doesn't necessarily resolve it, but he gets people feeling, thinking, talking. And I think that's what a great poet and an artist, musician needs to do. And he's doing it.
800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Russ is on the line.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Great show. Really, you know, excited that Bruce has come out with this work right now. It makes perfect sense. I'm really glad he's with the E Street Band, because that move of his back to playing with the band was just was really great to see last time out, and this is going to be great. But I just wanted to touch, you know, the things that have just been said by Nick. You know, really cover him and what he does really, really well, putting it, encapsulating it. But I was thinking that a lot of times, you know, he talked about, he just mentioned, you know, the Republicans and Born in the USA and kind of that kind of thing getting co-opted. And I think, Bruce, you know, as you said about the ambiguities of the American, you know, scene and how it gets represented, I think this thing of calling, you know, the ode to the everyman, I think that's just a little, I think that oversimplifies it. I think that, you know, rock and roll is a hard business. He's a hardworking guy, and he respects hardworking people. And I don't think that they're – I think that it can kind of sound, you know, you say too populist, or it can sound a little simplistic. But the working person isn't as complicated, you know, and I think as sophisticated as – and I think he pays respect to that aspect of it and doesn't try to oversimplify it. He's just very good at simplifying complicated things in his music, his style, and his language.
Yeah, I don't.
And he's gotten better and better at that.
And you think he's getting better at that?
Yeah. Whereas Dylan, I think, they're both really incredible poets as young people, young men. But Dylan seems to have gotten more complicated musically as he got on with, you know, Blood on the Tracks, Desire, Empire Burlesque. Whereas Springsteen's music was much more complicated in the beginning. And he started really just more soul-searching, more refining who we are, what we should be about, what really matters. And it's been a really interesting evolution, and he's just
What's interesting, Russ, is that we've been talking mostly about the lyrical, the narrative aspects of these songs. Let's talk for a second about the musical aspects of these songs. We were talking earlier, yeah, there's a new producer in the studio. He produces Pearl Jam. It's a heavy, heavy guitar thing on most of the songs. Whatever happened to Professor Roy Bittan? He's disappeared. There's a very interesting attempt to bring in some Asian music as well. There's a song called Worlds Apart, and I think we're going to hear it in a second. Uses all kinds of or Asian influences. Bit of Qawwal, the Sufic singing from Pakistan. I mean, Bruce has sung, you know, gospel long enough. What do you think, guys? Do you think that it works? I got to tell you, my prediction for the next decade is that music from South Asia is going to be the really big thing that happens. Is he getting on the bandwagon soon?
Well, I have to say that my social justice side makes me say this is fantastic. I'm glad he did this. It's one of those little drops in the mix that basically says this is not going to be a jingoist us-them kind of thing. And it's a very sophisticated move in that sense. Musically speaking, in terms of the music that I like from the Middle East, Afghanistan, Far Asia, I don't think it's great musically. And I think it feels a little funny. So I'm of two minds, and I guess that's not a problem, though, because as I said, I think the whole record is about talking about these things. It's not one of these, unilateral anthems a la Toby Keith and a few of the other more bombastic things that have been out there lately.
Right. And the interesting thing, of course, is he is trying to explore understanding that worldview. We'll accept it and say, well, maybe the music doesn't work for us or not. I just want to remind people about the Steve Earle story, which is going around at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
Listeners who may not know Steve Earle, who is a singer-songwriter who's, he's up there with, will I get bad calls if I say he's as good as Bruce? No. But he's darn fine writer, is in a lot of trouble right now down south because he actually attempted to write a song, he has written a song, that looks at the world as he imagines John Walker Lind might have seen it before he embarked on his course. It's interesting to try and deal with this particular aspect of September 11th, why the people came to us in this way.
Yeah. Well, this is a really difficult question for all Americans to face. And I'm one of those people that believes that the collapsing tower of 9/11 is terrible, horrible, and it's awakened us. And we had a very strong military response that Bruce Springsteen himself said it was better and more orchestrated, or I think he said articulated, than expected from the Bush administration. But to me, there's another burning tower in America today, and it's one Springsteen has taken on over and over again, and that's corporate America and its corporate greed. And I think we have to kind of balance the larger set of social questions about ourselves. Woody Guthrie used to say, when you travel through this world, you meet lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a six-gun, some with a fountain pen. The attacks on the buildings were six-gun type attacks, and they were responded to by six guns. And we triumphed in that arena in many ways up to now. But the attack on our sense of morality in the public square and our sense of what is right and proper with finance and taking care of people who are on pensions and what have you, that's been attacked from within. And that to me is more troubling, because we know that the enemy is within us. And I applaud Bruce for actually having taken that on his whole career. And this record, there's maybe a little lag in terms of time, but obviously that's been the issue of the last few spring and summer months.
Yeah, he did a song called American Skin a couple of years ago, and he sort of took it on the chin from groups like Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, and they thought it was sort of an unfair slap at police officers. But really, the song was a public service announcement about what happens when people get into bad situations, whether it's a police officer, whether it's a young black kid. And Bruce, doing what Bruce does, looked at the situation and wrote a song, and I don't know if he paid a price for it. I think he did the right thing. I really do. But it's funny, because now Steve Earle's in the same situation.
People and he got in the same situation in exactly the same way. People don't even hear the song. They see half the lyric quoted out of context.
Oh, they hear the chorus
and
the big rave up.
And that's it. And they're gone, and they're convinced that somebody's saying something they shouldn't be saying. We're going to go into the break. We're going to hear something a little bit more traditional from Bruce as we come into the break. We'll be back afterwards to take more of your calls, listeners. The Boss Knows How to Do This better than anyone. It may be a sad song, but you've got to get up and jump. This is Lonesome Day. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is On Point.
Lonesome day. It's all right, it's all right, it's all right, yeah. It's all right, it's all right, it's all right, yeah.
From Boston.
I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is On Point.
Can't see nothing in front of me. Can't see nothing coming up behind. Make my way through this darkness. I can't feel nothing but this chain that binds me. Lost track of how far I've gone. How far I've gone, how high I've climbed. On my back's a 60-pound stone. On my shoulder, half mile of line. Come on up for the ride. Come on up with your hands in mine. Come on up for the rising. Come on up for the rising.
The Rising, title track of Bruce Springsteen's new album, just out today. We're talking about it with Nick Spitzer, who's in New Orleans, and the producer and host of American Roots, and with Jonathan Pont, who's associate editor of the Springsteen fanzine Backstreets. Nick, where does a song like that fit into the tradition of Woody Guthrie?
Well, it's certainly generally evocative and poetic, and you know, the fire here has that feeling, as I was kind of saying before, that there's a sense of Holy Spirit, and there's a sense of passion, there's a sense of pain and loss, and this is apparently a fireman rising up in this building, and yet is his soul going to rise to heaven? Will these people rise together in love? There are all these kind of emotions thrown there. It's probably a little more abstracted than the Woody Guthrie kind of work, you know, that you would have, say, in This Man, This Land Is Your Land, or Vigilante Man, or that sort of thing. But I think it suits the times, and in that sense, the relationship between the singer, poet, musician, and the audience is probably more similar than the music itself. I like how the chorus, you know, I think Springsteen says in these songs, the verses are the blues and the chorus is the gospel. I mean, the chorus really feels gospel-like, almost like you're at a tent revival or something here, and you're not quite sure if you're being saved or you're passing on or what's happening.
Jonathan, what do you think?
Well, it's funny. At the top of the program, you talked about Springsteen and the church, if you will. And really, what this is about, this record, is congregation. And that's always what Springsteen's music has been about. Are we going to be a nation that sort of recognizes and embraces and tries to overcome its difficulties? Or are we going to be sort of a nation that papers over its troubles and just sort of goes higgly-piggly down the road on illusions? And that's where I think it sort of fits into the Guthrie over a little bit more than some of the other things.
800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Bruce, not the boss. Bruce is on the line.
Yes, I have. Thank you for having me on. And I had a somewhat perhaps troubling question to ask, not to be a troublemaker, but I was reading a review of Springsteen's new album, and he mentioned that he thought, and I quote more or less directly, that the invasion of Afghanistan had gone very smoothly, and I was struck by the juxtaposition of this and the release of the story involving the UN accusation that the U.S. covered up evidence in the recent family wedding massacre. And so I was wondering if you could locate Springsteen in the wider international conflict, given that the war on terrorism is rapidly morphing into a war to unseat Saddam Hussein. And I'll take my...
Okay. Jonathan, do you want to just stay with us, Bruce, in case there's a chance for conversation here? Jonathan, what do you say to that?
Bruce did come out. There was an article that the Associated Press carried that he felt that the war had been expedited with surprising ease, to paraphrase what he said. I don't know how Bruce would feel about the conflict if it were to get worse or to take a turn for the worse or be over quickly. It's war, and I think the caller mentioned something about a cover-up of one sort or another.
Yeah, the wedding massacre.
There is an old adage that the truth is usually the first casualty in war, and that's probably something to keep in mind. But what Bruce actually thinks, you know, I don't know. But he did say that the war had been expedited.
Don't you think some of this is – this is Nick in New Orleans. Don't you think some of this has to be chalked up, though, too, to the sort of the lag of time? I mean, this record is what, being more or less finished by May. You know, most of the sort of the progression in the war that seemed heraldic and seemed like the appropriate punch back when we were hit occurs last year. And, you know, most of the news out of Afghanistan is not going to be positive news at this point, you know, unless the U.S. really gets committed to helping people and rebuilding the country. So all the military stuff is going to end up being, it seems to me, mistakes and problems of attrition and attacks. And to ask him to cope with this, you know, in the time lag process of an album is one thing. Now, in Woody Guthrie's day, you know, he might have been right on the radio and singing a new song, and maybe Bruce tonight on Nightline will address some of those things. So, you know, you can't really blame him for not being right up on top of it, I don't think.
Bring back the day of the broadside. Time for one last call. Gary is on the line.
Yes, hi, thank you. Michael, I had a question, a comment and a question. You had characterized a lot of the songs in terms of their narrative, and I was really struck. I was listening to the album on the way home from work today with the really kind of powerful snapshot pictures that they portrayed about emotion of grief. He really takes on this emotion of grief in very complex ways, and I don't know a lot about his biography, but he seems to really know what he's talking about. I mean, he captures the heaviness of it, the loneliness of it, and that really struck me as such a dominant sort of task in the album, I thought. And so I want to respond to one of the other callers had mentioned how a lot of that was in the context of male-female relationships. I had thought, and I was wondering if folks knew more about this, that the song Paradise, which I thought really wonderfully captured a lot of this overwhelming and penetrable nature experience of grief, was a parent-child loss. There was some line at the beginning about taking the school books from your pack, and the rest of the song just, okay. I had that association of just this overwhelming tidal wave of parental loss, and I was just wondering if I got that right or how other people reacted to it.
Let's listen for a second, and then, Guy, that's a great question, and we'll go over to Jonathan and Nick and just ask them to quickly comment, but let's listen for a second.
Take school books from your pack, plastics and wire in your keys, the breath of eternity on your lips, in the crowded marketplace.
Nick.
Yes.
this song's a conversation stopper.
It's a fascinating song. I was going to ask about it, too. In fact, I wanted to ask Jonathan what he thought about it. Because it has, in terms of what your caller's saying, there's no question about the ability to go from the grief or emotional core of a relationship and then map it outward onto, well, is this a loss because of there's been a tragedy or an attack or somebody didn't come home, what have you. I mean, that songwriters have always gone from the personal to the broader social. But this song, it feels, if you listen to all the lyrics, it seems almost like a suicide bomber is portrayed in this. And I wondered if Jonathan had some insight into these lyrics, because I'm a little bit at a loss as to where this song is headed. There is an allusion to life in Virginia, the Virginia Hills, but it does feel like some kind of rendezvous with death of a suicide bomber.
That is true. There is a suicide bomber element to it. But there's always one song on every Springsteen record that you sort of listen to and you're like, wow, when am I ever going to get my arms around that one? And for me, on this record, it's that song, Paradise, because I'm not quite sure which character is doing what and who was doing what with the school bag first and why Virginia figures in.
It's very ambiguous.
It's really ambiguous. And I'm like you said, conversation stopper.
Well, you know, we haven't been – this is one of those songs we're going to have to live with a bit. But given, you know, the relative, place that suicide bombers hold in the American esteem at this point, it's an interesting place to choose to be ambiguous.
Yeah. I why don't we just – we have a few minutes here, and this is a conversation stopper, and this is live radio. Look, we're going to listen to the album. You can join the discussion online at our website. Listeners, if you have any insights after you've listened to the song and studied the lyrics, post them at the website and help us. Thank you. We're coming to the end of the hour, and what I'd really like to do is just ask both of you to quickly summarize your feelings about where this album stands in the canon.
Very tall.
Who is this?
This is Jonathan again.
Okay, Jonathan says very tall. Go ahead.
I think that it was courageous for a number of reasons. First of all, it was made quickly, and Bruce tends to take a long time in the studio. So the fact that he was able to get these songs together and recorded well and out there is a real testament to perhaps the songs themselves. Where it's going to stand in 10 years, I don't know, because we're at a very interesting moment in history in terms of the this country. Hmm. But I think it compares well to all his stuff. Bruce is an insightful, hardworking songwriter. And actually, your last caller, let me capitalize on something he said real quickly about the level of detail in the songs and some of the feeling. Bruce actually does quite a bit of research before he writes songs. And even though the details per se don't come into play, they certainly have that, they lend a certain sense of gravity to the songs. Yeah. And he spoke to some of the families of different victims after 9/11. And so,
Nick, quickly, your view.
Well, I'm not a canon builder. I'm not one to say, oh, this is the great one, that's not the great one. I mean, there are records I connect to more and less in his canon. And I've said Ghost of Tom Jones and especially Nebraska are my favorite spec. You know, to me, musically, there's an awful lot of the pop sound that it just doesn't appeal to me as much as some of the old honky-tonk and carny rock feel you hear sometimes in the old days. And I like the quieter things. But this record has a dark sort of luminosity, if I can mix the visuals a little bit. And I think it's timely. I think it's courageous to come out and do this. Walt Whitman, who I allude back to one more time, the great American poet, you know, always said, be radical, be not too damned radical. I think Bruce Springsteen has managed to walk an interesting line between making hard social comments and still being widely accepted with up-tempo rock and roll. But he's in a privileged place in the town square where he can talk about these issues and encourage people to think about them. And my God, he's got us up, us night owls up watching morning television playing rock and roll. So something is clearly going on here. And I applaud just that act more than thinking about the record as meeting some standards and a canon of Springsteen's work.
Okay, Nick Spitzer, thanks very much. Nick Spitzer is host and producer of the public radio program American Roots. He was speaking to us from New Orleans. Jonathan Point, thank you also for joining in this conversation. Jonathan is the associate editor of Backstreets, the Springsteen fanzine, and I Was Serious listeners, onpointradio.org. Post your thoughts on this album. I'd like to know about them. And we're going to go out on the track My City of Ruins.
A blood red circle on the cold dark ground, and the rain is falling down. The church door's thrown open, I can hear the organ song, and the congregation's gone. My city of ruin. My city of ruin. Now the sweet bells of mercy drip through the evening trees. Young men on the corner like scattered leaves. The boarded up windows, the empty streets. Are my brothers down?
I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is On Point.
My city of ruin.
This is WBUR. We're funded by